You are listening to GeekaBoss Presents Read, Watch, Play. We discuss all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.
Hey guys, welcome to GeekaBoss Presents Read, Watch, Play. It's been a little while.
It's the biannual podcast.
We'll get there eventually.
What started a weekly podcast, like a bi-weekly podcast, is slowly shifting to biannual.
Yeah. Well, look, it depends what you count as a week, because a week on like Neptune is longer than a week here.
That's true.
Maybe it's a Neptune weekly podcast. Oh, that's really terrible. I shouldn't have said it. Sorry.
No, if you are listening on Neptune.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We are big on Neptune. We could be bigger.
It's probably, yeah.
Wow, we haven't only twice a year we get to do this. we're jumping off with Neptune.
In fairness, now you and Billy have been doing the We Like to Watch, which happens pretty much every week.
Doing it, crushing it, one of the two. You know,
yeah,
someone's
got to
keep the Geek of Oz podcasting alive.
Yeah.
All right, so let's first up. We're at Oz Comic Con today. We're actually outside, hence why it's so quiet.
Sunday.
Yeah, we usually do the Saturday. I kind of like the Sunday because you can walk around a little bit easier. Mm.
Yeah, this is chilled out. Less people elbowing each other to get to those pop vinyls.
Although,
yeah.
I accidentally kicked... There was a girl going with a walking stick. I accidentally kicked a walking stick.
Do we see accidentally? That's your word. It looked different from my angle. I'm sure the paramedic said she's going to be fine.
So that's been my day, just being a terrible person. Yeah.
Security are looking for you, by the way, but we threw them off the scent.
So what are you guys thinking about the con? What's the vibe?
I like it. Right. I like it. Every year, this is my third or fourth year, and each year they keep playing around with the floor plan and the setup. Mm. And this year is sort of broken down. There's not really the artist alley.
No, that's a good point.
The writer's alley kind of thing. Now it's all, and the merchants are all spread out in between each other.
Do you think,
so.
I kind of, because the thing with artist alley is... In the past, sometimes, I don't want to call out any names for cons, Supernova. No, but like...
Because that'd be crass. You're
but
one
year
people.
I was at Supernova and they... Yeah, we're not
cheap like that.
We are
completely impartial.
Yeah.
They had all the Artists Alley sort of... All the artists in Artists Alley in sort of their own isolated area. Whereas here today, you're right, they've spread out and they feel like they're actually part of the con instead of an afterthought.
Because, like, on years gone by, you'd go down that artist alley, and it's almost like going to Pet's Paradise, where all the dogs are.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's so cute. We're not buying a single one, but they're all together, and they all look as, like, cute as each other. But
no,
this is good.
Are these
quite a 10 out of 10 this year?
Have you actually... You're saying comic creators are cute. Have you actually seen a comic creator, Stu?
No. Well,
we're sweaty and bearded. I'm saying that as someone who writes comics.
Let's not go into stereotypes, fellas.
I tried to pet one, but he bit at me.
It's just because I fulfill the stereotype. I am sweaty and I am bearded.
No, it's
and
a
I also kick someone's someone's walking stick.
That's
because she didn't buy your book, though, in fairness.
Look, I got in front of someone's wheelchair today. You know, we've all been bastards today,
I think I'm actually doing all right. So
you're doing the best.
Yeah.
I do...
Which is odd for me.
On a side note, though, I feel like it would be almost impossible to come to this con on, like, the Saturday if you had your mobility restricted.
Oh, yes.
Can you imagine weaving in the crowd if you had, like, a walking stick or a wheelchair?
Yeah.
It would be impossible.
Nightmare situation, mate.
All right, so...
No, but I'm enjoying it so far. Yeah.
I feel like this is... It's bigger than what it was last year.
Yeah, like, I know we're in the same... We're still at Glebe Island. I don't think it's next year it might move back to Darling
to the
Harbor.
Entertainment Center, yeah.
But... No, it feels like they're getting deeper and deeper into this convention center.
Totally.
So that's probably a good sign.
And they've spread out. I think the corridors between stalls are a bit wider, so it is a bit easier to move now.
Yeah.
Like last year, it was quite claustrophobic.
Yeah, and especially if you want to stop at a stall and take a look.
Yeah.
I think me and Chris were kind of discussing this on the floor. I think it's kind of the way cons in Australia are shifting now. Because sort of where the mass appeal is, it is in the merchandising and sort of the pop culture fandom over comic books. There's definitely a shift towards that. That's also not a bad thing, but I think it does maybe shift to sort of people who come to these events.
And if you stop selling pop vinyls at this thing, there'd be nothing to buy.
I feel like replica weapons.
Yeah,
I feel like at this point the whole geek industry would crumble if pop vinyls go down.
Well, it's the bricks that it's built on. The actual industry is just like Lego, but with pop vinyls.
But yeah, if I had to describe the con here today, it's lots of pop vinyls.
It is. But then, you know what's so annoying about pop vinyls is I want to just start buying them because they're adorable.
They're you know what, someone tweeted, I forget who it was, but said, like, in the dumps of the future, they're just going to be full of pop vinyls.
Yeah, but like, they're all going to be, there's going to be 98 million different versions of Star-Lord.
It's going to be like when they went to dig up the old copies of E.T. on Atari. But they'll be digging up, like, Doctor Who vinyl, yeah. Pop vinyls.
The strange 1984 variant.
Look, as an unabashed pop vinyl collector, I appreciate having an outlet for my addiction, so yeah, I'm all in favour of there being lots of tiny plastic crap that
Whoever came up with the idea must just be living life now.
Rolling
in pop vinyls. There's actually a pop vinyl of the creator.
He's at that level. I do like how we come to Oz Comic Con and just go on a rant about pop vinyls.
Yeah, well, that's what we're here for.
No, it's we've seen quite a number of good costumes this year. There's a very in-depth Dark Knight Batman wandering around.
Yeah, that was really good. We had put that on the Twitter feed, him standing next to Gumby.
That was a marvelous moment, two of my childhood heroes standing together.
Our own Ally is dressed as Eleven from Stranger Things.
That's what we'll do. Yes. Well, and we want to say a big welcome aboard to Ally, who's coming on to help us out. Yep. Anyone who follows the site knows it's a massive sausage fest, so always good to get the other gender involved.
I've never had anyone call my sausage massive.
Yeah, mine's more of a regular size sausage fest, but I'm, you know, from certain angles.
Certain angles and lighting.
Yeah. Wow. No, but it's been I'm having a good year this year. And in terms of celebrities, you had a brush with fame last night.
Let's talk about that. So I got to have dinner with Carl Urban last night I can say it now because it's happened, so it's no longer confidential. The Barker's restaurant at Park Royal on Darling Harbour.
Now, I have a lot of questions for you because it was you and, like, was there 9 people in total that were at this dinner?
So, yeah, 9 people in total, but the restaurant was booked out for all the dinners. So people like Joe Flanagan, Charles Martinet, Tim Omundsen, they all had tables in the same place, which was very chill.
Were you allowed to approach anyone else, or was it just a matter of...
No, they also
no touching?
Eye
contact.
The hard and fast rules were no photos and no autographs, and if you ask for either, they kick you out. But we all got a group photo with Carl on the steps, which you'll get emailed.
Oh, you're on first name basis.
Mm. Well, yeah,
Roberto with Mr. Urban,
K-Dog.
K-Dog.
But no, all the other tables, like, they seemed quite into it and chatting to their respective guests. And Carl Urban came in with Katie Sackhoff, who he's currently dating. She's Starbuck in the re-release of Battlestar Galactica.
And she was the girl in Into Darkness. Is that Katie Sackhoff?
No, that's Alice Eve.
Okay.
You're thinking of? Yeah. Ah. But no, Carl Urban was a lot of fun. He seemed to have had one or two drinks before coming to the table.
He partook,
and had quite a few vodkas at table.
But you sniffed her of vodka?
He was a lovely guy to talk to, though. Like
he was saying that it made him, like, nice and loose, and he was pretty honest and candid.
Yeah, like, he wasn't, like, slow, drunk, but, like, he was very chatty, very personable, very...
Forthright
about his opinions on some past movies he'd made and some movies that... He didn't look too kindly on. Doom.
So he knew the ones that didn't quite meet the expectations.
Yeah. Isn't that good when there's that self-awareness to be like, yeah, I've done some average movies.
Yeah. He is still, for those who are wondering, very keen to do something more with Judge Dredd. Whether it's a sequel or like a TV show or something, he seemed quite interested, but it's just about getting the powers of totally. Who to do it.
Did he make light of any of the recent Australian sporting achievements?
He did. He actually talked about the rugby. He talked about how...
I don't know if I'm comfortable discussing, like, sport on this podcast.
keeping in mind the caveat that I am
rugby?
Not a sports ball person at all, he did talk about...
the fact that you call it sports ball indicates
well,
that.
Yeah. Not a good start.
He'd just come from watching the All Blacks versus... someone
Argentina
and apparently the All Blacks kicked their asses.
They decimated
and he talked about
how All Blacks are very good at the rugby.
They are very good at the rugby. They can do all the rugbies.
They kick they kick and they throw the ball and they
catch
it
much better than us.
Yeah,
but he did that the last two, because I've seen him, he came out at the Star Trek Into Darkness premiere and the Star Trek Beyond, and he just walks straight out and just starts bagging the Aussies. It's great. Like he calls Australia, they call it the West Island in New Zealand.
Sports, yes, I understand completely.
Yeah. Apparently we've had 13 years of bad games.
Yes,
they
said. We've not been doing the good games. I think it's 14 years. But anyway, back to dinner with Carl Urban. What did you have?
What was the entree?
What did he have, more importantly?
He didn't eat much. He was on the liquid diet.
What a scoop. Carl
Urban didn't eat. That's no, a Gigaboz exclusive.
Yeah, it would appear that he did not eat his vegetables, but still got his dessert. So that's
no. Well, no, he actually.
You think you know a person?
Yeah. No, but it was nice to talk, very friendly to talk to. Just on a personal note, he kind of was keen on my PhD work a little, which was a bit cool.
For people listening at home, Chris, the pitch of the PhD is Chris did a PhD on Batman. Yes, the government paid for him to do a PhD on Batman. Yep. Living the dream.
I am the not the 1%, maybe the second percent, or the higher end of the 99% there.
So did you, is this one you've printed off and you just kind of lazily slid over to him at dinner? Or is it like, oh, what is this? So what have we got? What have we got here? Mr. Urban. Oh, well, did I just catch you peru? Oh, look, now that I've got your attention, let's go through this.
He was asking us what we do, and I just sort of dropped in conversation. Well, you know, I'm a university teacher. I've got a doctorate.
Boom.
I talked a bit about Star Trek Into Darkness and how it talks about post 9/11 and so on. And he was genuinely interested. And we talked about Batman and which was the best Joker. He's a staunch Heath Ledger fan.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like Ledger probably is the best Joker. Yeah.
There were no Leto supporters at that table.
Leto played Joker?
See, I thought not, but apparently
he did.
Oh, that's
what that was.
Yeah.
I thought he just played a douchebag who looked like
the Joker. I thought he played a Joker, not the Joker.
Member.
Ooh, yeah. Shots fired.
Yeah. Take that, Leto.
Okay, so he was interested in your PhD, and you had a good chat about it?
Had a good chat about that. Yeah, he talked about Doom. He talked about Priest, which is a film he did a few years ago with Paul Bettany. He talked about Star Trek, obviously, and growing up loving Star Trek. Talked a bit about Lord of the Rings. And he's filming Thor. We actually saw some, he showed us on his phone some in-progress shots of his makeup for Thor, because he's playing Scourge the Executioner.
Bet Disney's really happy that that happened.
Yeah, well.
I was saying to Chris, I wonder if the fact that he was a bit looser, like, kind of gave him not the courage, but meant he showed the photos. I wonder if he was completely sober, if that wouldn't have happened.
I mean, have a feeling he's going to get met by, like, Donald Duck and a Mickey Mouse in the
with like baseball bats.
Yeah, look, Urban, you want to talk about the Thor, do you? let's go for a drive.
I signed no NDA, so I can talk about it. And it's not like I have the photos, but it looked really cool. He's also got a great photo with Chris Hemsworth as Thor, and they're sort of doing like.
Ragnarok just keeps looking better and better.
It really does.
You know what?
It sounds like a lot of fun.
I think the really smart thing about putting
Taika Waititi. Or as I like to call him, Honolulu Waikiki, which is not correct.
I think the advantage of putting him on is the fact that people are like, oh, this is going to be a different film. The Thor films in the past haven't been the strongest of the franchise. So I think they're in a position to, you know what, it's unlikely they're going to lose any audience.
No.
They're only really going to gain audience.
And I think they're the most fertile for comedic stuff, given the fish 100%. Out of water.
Straight, like, Thor's the ultimate straight man.
Yeah, and putting him with Banner, like, they're just too great. Because, I don't know, did you guys see Ghostbusters?
No,
yes,
not yet.
I certainly did. Hemsworth is pretty funny.
Yeah, and I think he's, like, my thing with Hemsworth is he's too good looking. He's far better looking than he is an actor at the moment. So his looks thrust him into this sort of leading man role.
But his acting skills can't necessarily keep up.
He's better as a supporting, like almost not the
same problem I have with this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm exactly like Chris Hemsworth.
Exactly.
Look, you are just as gorgeous.
And this is the problem. If you're the face of this operation, I don't know what that says about us. we're in a world of pain.
Don't show my face on this.
So, returning to Carl Urban, what I wanted to ask you, Chris, was the fact that, right, so it was you and nine other people who all paid for the privilege of having dinner with Carl Urban, which kind of is a bit of an awkward position if you're a performer and you're having dinner and you kind of know that the situation is contrived, the wrong word, but it's a
bit manufactured.
Yeah. Do you reckon the fact that he, you know, had a bit to drink to loosen up was a wise move, so it feels a bit more natural?
Well, look, he came to the table quite friendly already. He wasn't falling down drunk, he wasn't spewing, he wasn't
just
whatever.
He
was a bit buzzed.
Sunday night.
He was quite chatty. He was very friendly to everybody and sort of was, you know, getting conversation going and, you know. At one point, one of the guys at the table was talking about working at a bank. He engaged with that quite a bit.
Everyone knows Carl Urban's got a lot of bank-based conversation topics.
Well, he did. Surprisingly, he did.
Where do you guys get those pens from? The ones on the chain? Do they come on the chain or do you have to put them on the chain?
Another Geek of Oz scoop. This is a free podcast. Two scoops.
Yeah.
You're welcome, world.
But it, only still only two times a year we do this.
Yeah, this we really need to monetize this shit and get something going.
Then take it to the bank. Yeah, maybe you've got some bank stock.
Yeah, we
now we know about these pens on chains.
Relevance. But no, I can't stress enough. He was a really nice guy. Spoke very fondly of his Star Trek co-stars because we talked about all the dub smashes he did with like John Cho and Chris Pine.
Oh, which are brilliant.
And you said he's still pretty addicted to dub
smash? He's still addicted to dub smash.
Another scoop.
You know, loves all of that.
Scoop. He's like Baskin Robbins here with
yeah, I know,
scoops.
Right? But it was... And I wasn't even there to find out like stuff about that. It was just nice to sit and talk
Totally.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you, I guess the advantage of these sort of dinners is because geeks are often not the most social of creatures, a lot of people are just happy to sit back and sort of let you and Loni do a lot of the question. You and your girlfriend do a lot of the question
fiance.
Asking. Fiance, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Loni and I were there just driving a lot of the conversation as well. Like some of the other people at the table seemed a little bit sort of starstruck. But they did get, everyone got a chance to ask him things. You know, he said hi to everyone, shook some of our hands. We all did cheers with him for...
Sounds like he did a few more cheers.
He did a couple of cheers, actually.
He went around the room. Did a lap.
And, it was good. It was really good.
Awesome. One thing that seemed a bit off with it, from my opinion, is you said you had dinner at 8. Who eats dinner at 8? You know, what's wrong with a 5:30 dinner? I'm a fan of the 5:30 dinner. I'm going to come out and say that.
What do you mean? Early bird special? What are you, a pinch now?
We call them nursing home dinners at our house, and we very much enjoy them. 8 o'clock for dinner.
Mm.
What is it, mainly just mashed peas?
So I feel like I just have to say that, you know, if you think you're doing one of the experiences, and like me, you like a 5:30 dinner, maybe not for you. 8 o'clock dinners.
So you
would are we, rock stars?
You would have penciled in a nap at like 4 just to charge up. But I'm not going to make it.
For anyone though who is thinking about doing one of those next year, they are a lot of fun, and it is kind of cool also seeing the other guest stars that you may not be sitting with, but just being in the same room as like Aaron Ashmore or Katie Sackhoff, who were both there last night. Katie Sackhoff's table looked like they were having a ball too.
I feel like she'd be fun. She seems like a fun
She
person.
Came in and just looked so alive, and she sat at her
table. That's what I like in my celebrity.
But I mean, like, because Loni pointed this out to me on the way home. She just sort of walked in, because she and Carl Urban are dating, and they came in together. He came, sat at our table. She went and sat at hers nearby, and she just sort of was very vibrant and sort of like, to her table, you could see she's going like, hi, how's it going? Nice to meet you all. Like, and they were laughing a lot and chatting. Like, we were good too, but she just sort of was... It was like a whole other kind of thing in that table. She seemed quite wonderful. Charles Martinet, who's the voice of Super Mario, had his own table. And every time I sort of walked past to get to the men's room, they were sort of sat listening to him like it was like a kid's story time. Like, they were all sort of raptly paying attention. He was telling stories.
And then the princess was in a different castle.
And the best thing was, who had the ribeye? It's a me!
Yeah. he seemed like a really nice guy. At one point, Tim Omundsen, who was in Psych, got up and was banging his glass and was congratulating this couple who were there for their wedding anniversary.
Oh,
and then there
nice.
Was like a Mexican wave where a couple of other tables then picked up their water pitchers and banged them and were like, well, actually, at this table, they're celebrating another wedding anniversary and this person's got their birthday.
And then the two people having the wedding anniversary had to fight to the death.
Yeah. That's only fair. Like, that's the rules. That's
they gave them a batlar and just
that's how that's how the Park Royal's done it since they opened.
Pretty much,
It's a battle to the death restaurant.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not the best business model, but hey, they're still in operation, so who are we to judge?
Yeah, but it was a really fun night. We couldn't ask for autographs or photos. We are getting a group photo, and I will put that up on the Facebook page when I get it. They should be emailing it to me this week.
Bit of red eye reduction on Carl Urban is going to be.
We shall see. But yeah, it is like, I know some people are a bit, and I know I certainly was a bit squeamish on shelling out because our tickets were $220.
Yeah,
And
it's walking around money.
Yeah. It is walking
around money.
How much
I paid
money.
To get into parking today out of the
well,
convention?
Well, look, I paid
whoa,
it.
Shots fine.
I
take
paid
that
it
big
and,
parking
and spent most of the weeks after that just sort of living on like. Pack-a-day noodles for food. But if it's someone you really want to go see, it is a good experience. All the stars that were there seem very, very personable and chatty.
Yeah.
And just as like a one-off thing, like I wouldn't do that every year.
Yeah.
But if there was someone who came that I really wanted to see, it was a really good experience.
And that's a lottery that you went into, isn't it, for that?
No. I sat on the website until the tickets came up and just kept refreshing.
Okay.
And was lucky because the tickets for Carl Urban sold out inside of 2 minutes.
Because he's one of, in terms of guests at the con this year. I'd say him and Sackhoff are probably the biggest.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And I wonder, I can't help but feel like they probably got Carl Urban because he's already in the country doing Ragnarok.
Yep.
Yeah, good chance.
It's a shame they couldn't get Hemsworth because, oh my God, that would have been an amazing dinner.
Yeah, but I wonder maybe since Hemsworth is probably overseas, like a lot filming, he's probably wanting to be with his family, I assume.
Yeah, apparently he's currently still in Queensland.
Yeah, because they live it. They've got a place at Lennox as well, I think. Like he's got a place there.
Yeah. But he and Tom Hiddleston are apparently still up there working on the film.
Okay.
And Carla said I think he has another couple of weeks on it, and then it sounds like they're starting to wrap up a bit. And apparently
that's due. Is that that's
next year?
November next year.
Yeah, late next year.
Yeah.
So what are the next? What do we got next year? Guardians and Ragnarok.
Guardians
and
Ragnarok.
Spider-Man.
Oh, Homecoming.
Spider-Man in July.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen much of the photos to come out of Spider-Man?
A couple. I'm kind of not really into the behind-the-scenes stuff for the Marvel films, so I'm like, I'm going to see it anyway.
Yeah.
My one gripe with it is that Tom Holland looks the part, except that he looks too muscular.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's meant to be like a weedy nerd, and he's got very obvious muscles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then Spider-Man kind of gets that as he sort of develops, and his powers kind of give him that a little bit of buff.
Yeah, maybe it shouldn't like, be obvious. But he looks pretty
good. As long as he's not Henry Cavill, then it's all good.
But even Tobey Maguire put some bulk on.
It's been so long since I've seen those Spider-Man movies.
We should watch those and commentate on them with some beer.
Yeah, I'm down.
Especially Spider-Man 3. We should commentate. It's just
I haven't seen Spider-Man 3, so I'd be going clean.
Really? Okay. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to have a Spider-Man 3 commentary where we expose Christoph to the travesty that is.
That's
Sam Raimi's concluding
chapter.
I'm not sure
if I'm comfortable with the word exposed.
Oh, wow.
Just for the emo sequence alone. It's like,
mate.
And then put it up against like the Anchorman jazz flute sequence. It's so similar.
Well, why don't we move...
Stay tuned.
Why don't we shift to what the podcast is called Read, Watch, Play. Yeah. Talk a little bit what we've been up to. Do you want to go first, Stu? You occasionally see movies.
I have. I racked up my 160th yesterday for the year. In
cinemas. You just hate free time? Is this what
this
is
about? I just hate myself. This is the way I'm working my way through it. So I don't even like... You know what it is? Like someone said to me... Like when I did the Sydney Film Festival this year, and they're like, oh, how many films are you doing? And I said, oh, about 40. And they're like, oh, that's a lot. And I said, I have no choice. Because I put myself out as a film guy. So they're like, oh, 40 films. Of course you're doing that. So I can never... Like it's going to take me ages to actually step away from this. But... Best thing I saw a really good film yesterday, actually. It was Louis Theroux doing the My Scientology.
How is that?
Ooh. I really want to see
is
that.
How much does he get on them?
It's good.
Closed up.
Yeah. Did you guys see Alex Gibney's Going Clear documentary?
I haven't.
No, okay. I've heard good things about it, though.
You sort of... they make a really good double feature, because, like, Going Clear, the Alex Gibney one, takes it through. It's just like a nuts and bolts, follow the bouncing ball. L. Ron Hubbard did this... blah, blah, blah. He started this, this happened, this happened. And just so through the chronology of the church. I use the term church very, very, very loosely. I just hate that Scientology exists. Not because people can't have their beliefs, but it exists because they basically put a gun to the head of the IRS and said, look, if you don't help us get declared as a church, we're going to just tie up America in litigation. And that's how they do things. So at the time...
Well, technically, that's how we got Geek of Oz classified.
Exactly, exactly.
We have to pay tax on the mountains of money we make doing this.
But now we're all, like, we've been declared saints, so it's not too bad. But, so, but like, Scientology was on the ropes. They had $750 million outstanding in tax owing. They had $250 million in assets. They were gone for all money. They made that play. They got declared a church. And then now they're billions and billions of dollars industry. So, but what's good about... Louis Theroux is he takes former members, former high-ranking senior officials, and he sort of recreates experiences within Scientology, like the hazing that David Miscavige used to do.
Oh, wow. So he gets people to act out.
Yeah, so he brings in actors, and what happens is you can start to see, like, the people that he's got that are... I think it's Marty Rathburn is the guy who was, like, one of the head shit-kickers for the... head kickers for the church. So he's putting all these people through their paces, and the church start coming after him again because they do this thing called like squirrel busting, where if anyone leaves the church, they like film them in close quarters. Like they'll just be up in their face in public, whatever they're doing, they'll be filming them all the time, either to provoke a reaction or just this whole like
you're not getting to us, you're not getting to us, you're not getting to us, but even though you're standing in their face with a camera.
Mm.
So he starts doing all this, and it starts happening to him again, and Louis Theroux hits some good points. He's like, Rathbun's like, I can't believe this is happening, like, they're really impacting on my life. And he's like, hang on, you were in this church for 20 years, like, you'd ordered these sort,
like,
of things.
You've done this to people,
like, and you sort of see that there's that, like, finally getting a bit of that, like, inside outside the cult. Yeah, it was really good. I think you sort of need to see them both together, because I think knowing the history of Scientology and now seeing, like, these, you see their methods really in play. But that gets covered in Alex Gibney's one as well. But I'd see them together.
So do you reckon Louis Theroux hits notes that previous documentaries haven't? Because there's been a lot of stuff on it.
I put a thing up on Twitter last night, and they were like, someone from London or something hit back at me saying, yeah, well, you're too bad the documentary didn't talk to anyone in Scientology and it's all lies. I'm like, well, the floor's open. If you guys think, like, if you think people have got it wrong, where's your doco to, like, take us in?
Was it a Scientologist who said
it
to you?
Yeah, and it's like, well, you show us where, like, all right, if this is their argument, you come back with, you open the doors, because they're such a secretive community.
It's interesting, yeah, that they're very much don't let information out, yet they're not putting any, like, they have the resources, why aren't they making their own material?
Because they don't, because that's just not, that's not how it works. So, it didn't really, after seeing Going Clear, it didn't really give me anything new.
Okay.
But it was just an interesting perspective, like, to see the recreation of things, because there's an infamous, like, thing that's the place called The Hole, where McScavige used to take, like, the upper echelon of the Scientology executive and, like, keep them there and break them effectively, like, psychologically and physically. Apparently he's, like, allegedly quite a violent dude. So this sort of recreated that scenario, which is kind of confronting to see in action.
I was about to ask you, was it fairly confronting watch?
Like, you sort of look at this stuff and you're like, how is this still a thing?
Mm.
Like, you don't, there's not as many religions. Like, you don't really hear inside of, like, sort of Christianity, Islam, I mean, there's no violence related to Islam. There are the fanatical sects involved, but you don't get, on average, like, people saying, you know, senior members were taken to places and abused, like, sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
And most religions now are, like, doing sort of open house to say, look,
totally,
we are so clean hands. Come in and check out what
we're
doing.
Well, I mean, it was like a royal commission.
I know there's still a lot of blood on the hands, but it just, Scientology is just this weird.
Seems like every party institution is pro this sort of behaviour.
Yeah.
Whereas in other religions, it seems to be certain individuals,
not
the institution as a whole.
Like, and this feels like it's written into the DNA. Mm. So, yeah, no, that was interesting. So that's sort of the one thing.
And on a complete opposite note, you're off to see Pete's Dragon today.
I am off to the premiere of that. So,
is Carl Urban in that? Speaking of,
he is full circle. He actually is.
He did say last night we should go watch it.
He's proud of that.
Oh, he seems to
film.
And I also caught on Friday night Sully, Clint Eastwood's new one, about the plane that landed on the Hudson.
And that has Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks, yeah.
Who is not Carl Urban.
No, and Aaron Eckhart. Really good film. Like, I was surprised. Like, I liked American Sniper. I think it's still, Clint Eastwood still makes films, like, really fast and loose now, because, you know, time's running out. You can't do too many retakes. But I like things like where you know the story, and this is just sort of a bit of the witch hunt afterwards of the Miracle on the Hudson, about Captain Sullenberg, I think his name, that landed the passenger jet on the Hudson River in New York. And just interesting, like, what, there's some of the imagery now, like, we can't help, especially, you know, nowadays, like, low altitude planes in New York, the terror that puts into everyone's heart.
Yeah.
Right? And there's some shots in this where, like, you know, it's clearly, like, CGI, but you're, like, people actually looking at the window, and there's that look of, like, it's happening again.
Mm.
Like, what is... And it's just an interesting... it's pretty short. It's only 90 minutes, but it just does exactly what it needs to be. So, yeah, they're sort of my things at the moment that I've been catching. Got a few things sort of looking forward to. Kevin Smith's new film comes out this week.
Are you really...
Look,
I've heard a lot of bad things.
I know,
about
and I like Tusk, so I don't like. I just like when the fat man lets it go. Like, he just, I prefer him playing in this budget instead of, like, going up any higher. He's kind of like, if he's got nothing to lose, he's got a chance.
The one thing I'll say for Kevin Smith at the moment, it's he's doing stuff he genuinely wants to do with people he wants to do it
yeah,
with.
Yeah, yeah, and it's for no one's entertainment except his own stoned ass.
And I admittedly enjoyed Red State.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was one of his better films.
Like, for me, he's never reached back up to the heights of like Chasing Amy and Dogma.
I think maybe it was
such a good movie.
Yeah, like it seems like a different person made.
Yeah,
like it is a different person. Like,
but that was post Weed and Kevin Smith, who was seemed hungry for it.
Yeah, and it just it's. But I think it's same as like, you know, I think he like a bit like Tarantino. Like they sort of start to make. I think he got in this trap of like making Kevin Smith movies
like
instead
doing
of just
an an impression of their own movies.
And I think Tarantino's slight. Like I found that. With Hateful Eight, like he was making a Tarantino movie more than just he was making his next film. Like,
yeah, his take on something. It was his take on his take on.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I don't know. So, I don't know. We're catching. I'm catching Blair Witch tomorrow afternoon, which looks good. And we're watching Queen of Ireland tomorrow night for We Like to Watch.
Nice.
So Billy and I will be bunkering down and going through. We've sort of both been covering a bit of Netflix stuff recently, so that's sort of where our focus has been going on the watching side.
Well, I'll quickly fling it over to Chris. So, just on the read front, we're talking about Snow Crash, which you read.
Yes, I finally got around to reading Neal Stephenson's magnum opus. Good book.
That's a cyberpunk classic, you said?
Yeah, it's a foray into post-cyberpunk. It's all about this drug called Snow Crash that can disrupt these digital avatars in like a Matrix-style metaverse, but also can kill you in the real world. It deals a lot with ancient Sumerian mythology, of all things.
Not one of those books.
Oh, you know, just...
Again.
Not another
again,
one.
Regular like, walk in the park.
We've seen so much of it.
It's a bit dense on the mythology and a bit too expository, but it was still a really good book.
He lost me with the dude walking around with the two samurai swords. I was like, does it keep...
Oh, yeah, because you...
I started and it just was like... I think I left very... Like, probably in the first chapter, and he's shooting around delivering pizzas that have to be... And he's got samurai swords, and it's like...
It's a bit like that.
Is it like that the whole way? Is it just...
Well, it is like that for a bit, but then once it introduces the idea of these Sumerian gods who then created words that could be used to brainwash, and that's how the internet starts and things, it gets...
Which is a true story.
Which is a true story, totally.
Which is kittens for us.
It gets a bit too heavy and just a bit too explainy.
Okay.
It loses a bit of the fun of the opening bits where the guy has to deliver pizza or die.
Yeah.
I worked
at Domino's once, and I can attest that's what it's like.
Yeah.
Because the pizza joints in this future are owned by the mafia.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't deliver
again,
on time, then he's
100% true.
Screwed. Yeah.
The good people at Domino's.
And I've now moved on to Al Robertson's Crashing Heaven, which is another cyberpunk book. I'm in a bit of a mood at the moment because of Deus Ex. I'm in a cyberpunk mood. And it's a future where humanity lives in an asteroid and they've just had a massive war with these AI called the Totality. And there's a bloke who was a prisoner of war who defected to the Totality, possibly, maybe, who's come home to, like...
So his loyalties are kind of...
Well, it's a bit unclear. I'm only about 50 pages in.
Sounds a bit post-9/11, maybe.
Oh, everything I read is post-9/11 these days. My housemate likes to joke that everything I watch somehow has post-9/11 in it. Like, oh, did you watch Aladdin? Where's the post-9/11 in that? Or something. This is all my research. And, no, it's good. It's good. It's not a bad book so far.
Nice.
And on the play front, yes.
Yeah, do you think?
A shitload of Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
And you're in your second playthrough, is that correct?
I started it literally 10 minutes after finishing the first playthrough because it's such a good game. It's a bit of an abrupt ending. Like, for those who haven't seen, I do have a review of it up on the website. It's a very, very good game. It's clear Eidos Montreal really took their time to refine a lot of the stuff from Human Revolution, to really, you know, make the graphics a bit nicer and the story a bit cleaner. It does end abruptly. It's very clear they're gearing it up for another game, or possibly I've heard another trilogy of games.
Because the franchise is, what is it? It's across a whole bunch of different forms, like comics and books and...
Yeah, it's so they have this transmedia thing called the Deus Ex Universe, which is currently like a couple of comics. There are two novels. There
Any
are
films
four
in
games.
Development.
They've got the rights to a film, I think, either Brad Pitt or Leo DiCappuccino's production company has the rights to a film.
They've got the Divisions coming out. That might be the start of
a new wave of video game movies. Because
Assassin's Creed.
Hopefully, some actually good ones this time.
Because Warcraft was.
I'm not going to hold my breath on good video game movies. They still can't do it.
Yeah. Between Warcraft and the last Hitman movie, which was apparently garbage. No, they're not doing well. But the game Deus Ex is... Mankind Divided is really, really good.
Awesome.
And it'll make you want to watch Blade Runner again too, which I did.
Because I know you're a big cyberpunk fan.
Huge
which
cyberpunk
is...
fan.
I'd say a fairly underappreciated genre.
Yeah.
Well, there's only so much I've seen that you can do with it, and it's a very particular kind of sci-fi that I fully see why it doesn't appeal to everyone. It's all about ethics of transhumanism and, you know, there's a bit of mysticism with technology.
I wonder if going forward it's going to become a bigger genre because a lot of those issues we're slowly dealing with now.
Yeah. Well, you've seen in like things like Ex Machina and Her the last couple of years, that kind of like what happens when technology ages out past us at the moment, like AIs, and then what role does the human play when the technology is able to sort of grow without us?
And we're already, because we're already sort of, I mean, AI technology isn't there yet, but I reckon give it 10 years and it probably will be.
Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of the big cyberpunk works kind of came out before the internet was a thing. And with that addition, a lot of that has gone from being speculative to being quite real.
Yeah.
So all the things like Snow Crash, Neuromancer, Blade Runner, they're all written in a mainly digital age.
It'd be interesting to see where they take then the Blade Runner sequel.
I'm really hesitant about that.
But have you seen any of Denis Villeneuve's work?
No, I've heard Sicario was really good.
Sicario's amazing. Prison, like all his films. You should actually watch Enemy. He made with Jake Gyllenhaal playing...
The enemy?
Well, sort of. It's like, he's a dude who's a bit depressed and he watches a movie and sees like an identical twin.
Okay.
And it just sort of goes from there. But it just, I think if you sort of watch, if you watch that... And then think what he could do with a Blade Runner. It'd be really interesting.
My concern for Blade Runner is Leto's attached.
Leto's attached to Blade.
I would have been happy until I heard about his job
as a
Joker.
But it's also Harrison Ford. And you got Ryan Gosling, I think, as well.
Ryan Gosling. He'd do well. I'm looking forward to seeing him in it.
Yeah. I think there's some stuff for them to play around in that.
My big worry as well with the new Blade Runner is, having watched the original again the other day, it works so well because it's really practical, like all the effects and settings are real, and you know, it's a very enigmatic film. A lot of it has to really be passed after the fact, and I feel like because it's been done before, they might try to do it again but make it a bit more, air quotes, accessible, which would ruin what the kind of effect the first film had.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that it's so dense and they throw you in with very little explanation is part of the appeal, because the world seems dense and inaccessible.
And that's the odd thing, like, you go, that couldn't, to like recreate that world now in a practical, even a digital world, it's still like that, you're still looking at like a, I don't know, like an $80 to $100 million film, and I can't see it turning the being the $300 to $400 million hit that it would, and like Ghostbusters was like $140 million, and you go, like, you don't get that much bang for your buck anymore, really.
No,
like, you can,
did Ghostbusters make its money or flop?
No, I think it'll just fall short,
because the ironic thing about that was the movie wasn't great, but it wasn't for the reason the trolls online thought it would be. The cast was the best part.
Kate McKinnon was amazing.
I heard she was fantastic.
She was so great. Good. Like, yeah, I wish they could have got a sequel just to get her kind of that like brand of humor into the mainstream.
My biggest issue with that film was that the tone, right? They were trying to set these characters up as heroes, and I never really got that from the first couple of Ghostbusters films. These guys aren't heroes.
No,
we've made them that.
They're workmen.
That because we love the movie, but that was never kind of how they came across. I mean, Venkman's like a pervert.
Yeah, and they're like...
And Aykroyd's character gets a blowjob from a ghost.
Yeah.
Can we not...
Yeah.
Why does everyone skim over that?
Yeah.
Okay, so according to Wikipedia, the film's actually been retroactively renamed as Ghostbusters Answer the Call, probably to distinguish it from the first
one. I wonder if it's to distance itself a little bit.
And... it says the budget was 144 mil, and its global box office is 224.7 mil.
Oh wow! So it has
which
made
is
money.
Yeah,
really bad for a blockbuster.
Yeah, but with marketing, that'd still be well under.
Yep.
They've got to make 2.5 times their budget back, at least.
Yikes! Such a pity, because the cast was
so, like, you
so
look
good.
At even like BBS only just it was like $8.90, and they were like, that's just acceptable.
Quick segue, what do you guys think of the Justice League trailer that's out? How are you feeling about that movie?
Yeah.
Ooh, getting head shakes.
Suicide Squad was garbage.
I just don't think the course correction. And every time they say, "Oh look, we're taking on board the criticism of the last thing. We're changing this." You're like, "No, you're not." Like Man of Steel, they go, "No, no, we got what we did wrong, and then we got BVS." And then they go, "Oh look, oh okay, we got it wrong for that. Here's Suicide Squad." You're like, "No." And they're like, "Okay, guys, this time for Justice League, we're gonna be quippy, and you're like, "No." And they keep saying, and the early rumors on Wonder Woman are, it's headed for disaster as well. But it's like
the way I see it is DC's Filmverse is a forest fire, and every time they correct it, it's like taking a fire extinguisher to one tree and going, "Look, we've put one fire tree out, but the rest of the forest is still burning. They haven't addressed the core problem."
And I, you know what? I reckon it's tone.
Yeah. You look at like any marketing material from the cartoons, you just look at it and go, that's what Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman should be. Like, they're three glowing, cartoony figures
100%.
That should be in that world. Like, that's why Christopher Reeve works, because he was like, it's a cartoon. He's a goofball as Clark Kent, and then he's like this slick back hair, shiny example of like the best of us when he's Superman. It's like, that's maybe as like black and white as it has to be. If you can't deliver the Nolan trilogy for an entire like DCU, then you can't just have it in fits and starts.
I feel like they went in without a clear plan of attack. If they did have a plan of attack,
let's do what Marvel's doing.
Let's do the opposite. Like, as in, let's do the same film structure, but not the same. Like, we want to do an alternate tone because Marvel's light and fun and Whedon-esque. We want to do something different for the sake of being different without understanding why that thing works.
I think part of the problem is that DC went into the serious tone, which in itself is fine, except that what makes DC works and what distinguishes it from Marvel is the fact that you've got characters that are stuck in really shades of grey situations, but they make clearly right choices.
But
whereas Marvel is, they make choices that are a bit like in Captain America, Winter Soldier. He makes a hard choice that is technically correct, but it has a lot of negative consequences, which we see in Civil War. Whereas, like in Superman versus Batman, I'm like, did they make the right choice? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know what choice they made.
The reason we trust Superman, who has this god level of power, is he consistently makes correct choices in situations where we would struggle to.
But that's the thing. Like, I wish they had have just touched on, like, we're not in the sort of the 70s, 80s of making that just, all right, there's a problem in New York, the helicopter's falling off the roof. We're now like, we have global terrorism, we have all these things. I would have loved to have seen not Superman going in and killing an African warlord by putting him through a wall, but like going,
he just beheads Osama in the first. But
looking at why wasn't
that, like, a Frank Miller plot?
Why didn't he do something where he was like dealing with like suicide bombers or something? Like, if you want to get real and gritty, like go look at that. Like, go swooping in and like pulling out car bombs from the middle. Like, actually get a little controversial.
And I think that's what Marvel did a little bit with Hydra. It touched on some of those kind of who can you trust sort of those sort of vibes well without being too political. It touched on how we feel without being too blatant.
And the thing is, for Marvel, the genesis all of it comes down to Robert Downey Jr. looking down the camera and saying, "I am Iron Man." That line set the tone for everything to come, because they're like, this is cartoon make-believe land. So if Thor turns up in cartoon make-believe land, we don't care, because it's all just rock and roll. Whereas DC have gone for this more serious tone. You're like, but this is all pretty silly when you think about it.
Yeah.
Especially when you're going to have to start, whenever they bring in their big threat or whatever it's going to be, you're going to be like, so it's like Thanos? Oh, like,
big purple man with gloves? How is that not ridiculous?
Yeah.
It's going to be Darkseid, you know. But at the end of the day, as much as I love Batman and how serious he can be, he's a dude who dresses up like a bat.
Exactly.
And as powerful a hopeful symbol as Superman is, he dresses in two-thirds of the colors of the American flag with a big ass S on his chest and can, like, you got to embrace the goofy a little.
Yeah, it's silly.
Like, not entirely. You don't have to be incredibly, like, parodic and self-aware, but just have a little bit of reflexivity and, totally. And embrace
and self-awareness.
That.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we better wrap it up because Stu's got to head to Pete's Dragon.
Yeah.
But we just want to say a big thank you to the lovely people at Oz Comic Con for facilitating us today.
Indeed.
And you guys are diving back in to
we're going to walk the floor a bit more. If you haven't come to one of these events before, highly recommend it. It's, you know, even if you just come 1 year, it's a really great experience, a good way to meet other people in the community.
Really family-friendly.
100%.
One thing I love.
A lot of kids in there.
Yeah, I just love this is the one time a year where you can just get your costume on, come out, and you're with just like-minded people.
100%.
It's getting better and better each year. I wouldn't mind, we were talking about it before, wouldn't mind getting, they need to start getting a few more bigger stakeholders, like maybe like PlayStation, Xbox, or Microsoft,
well,
or
more
Disney.
Marvel slash Disney had a booth
they've got the Captain American thing. Then on the outside, they've got the Rogue One set up. So.
Which is interesting that they're bringing some of that sort of Comic-Con experience where these big stakeholders have...
Yeah.
Have booze to Australian cons.
So it's getting better. Like it's really like it's getting
totally.
It's getting much better.
I reckon, you know, a couple of years these are gonna get so much bigger.
Yeah. Well when they get back over into Darling Harbour and it's a new layout and it's, you know, a bit more central.
I reckon they'll be able to blow up even more.
I'd like to actually see some explosions. and if not, we'll bring them.
Alright guys, we'll wrap it up there, shall we?
Sounds good. Well, thank you for listening.
Well, so this time,
wonderful people,
June next year.
Yeah, I believe that's a schedule. But guys, you know, if you want constant Geek of Oz content, check out We Like to Watch. That'll have an episode dropping, I imagine, in a couple of days.
Usually drop like really very quick with a turnaround. So we usually like Tuesday. We try to do a show on like the Monday or the Tuesday, up for the Wednesday. We've been doing more spoiler-ish sort of things because we sort of we're
a discussion, right?
Yeah, like we're trying to find smaller films, but we're just having a chit chat. So is that just going through our list of what we're watching?
Well, thanks so much, guys. It's always awesome to catch up with you and talk geeky shit.
Bye.
Yeah.
See ya.
Farewell.
You've been listening to Geek of Oz Presents. Read, watch, play. We discussed all things pop culture, including comics, video games, TV, film, and anime.